This is the Ingles Information Aisle with Leah McGrath, helping you eat healthy, feel great, and understand your nutrition. Now, here's your host, Ingles dietitian Leah McGrath.
Good Saturday morning. Welcome to the Ingles Information Aisle. This is Leah McGrath, your Ingles dietitian. And if you listen to the show, you know one of the things I like to do is have different registered dietitians on the show talking about some of the fields that they're in. You know, not everybody's a supermarket dietitian. We've had dietitians who've been involved in school nutrition, sports nutrition, who've worked in hospitals, in food service. Just all sorts of different career paths and interests. And I became aware of a dietitian by the name of Karina Venter and on, Twitter, and started following her and looking at her conversation on social media, and was aware that she was really involved in the food allergy space. So I invited her to come on the show today to talk a little bit more about food allergies, and testing for food allergies, and what the difference is between a food allergy and a food sensitivity. And what about those tests that you see Groupons for in your email box? So hi, Karina, how are you?
Hi, hello. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm fine, thank you. It's a lovely sunny day again in Denver, Colorado, where I'm now based.
So can you tell us a little bit about your background, since I know that you are not originally from Colorado based on your accent? Can you tell everybody a little bit about where you grew up and where you're from?
Yes, I am South African by background, and I grew up in a very small town right in the middle of South Africa called Bloemfontein, where I also studied dietetics. Interestingly, in South Africa, the dietetics program is a four-year program, so we don't have an undergrad and then a postgraduate course. We start on day one studying dietetics.
Oh.
We have our first 2 years, we study together with the physical therapist and the medical students, and then after 2 years, we all split up and we then specialize in the different areas. And so our degree, it's a four-year degree, and we complete it as a BSc in dietetics. So it's a very different, I think, from how it's done in the States and also in the United Kingdom. But our degree also includes food service administration, as it does here in some of the universities. So then I completed my my degree in South Africa, and my husband and I then relocated to the United Kingdom, where I worked for 2 or 3 years as a general dietitian. We then moved to the Isle of Wight, which is a small island.
Oh, yeah.
Just south of Southampton. You take a boat, it takes 20 minutes, then you can get a train, which takes 1 hour and 19 minutes to get you right into the middle of London, almost right next door to Gideon Lack's office. So so I then lived on the Isle of Wight because we have a world-renowned allergy research center, and we're well-known for the ability to recruit large cohorts of children. For my PhD, I recruited 969 children born between 2001 and 2002 out of the 1,063 born. So you can see we recruited almost 97% of the population, which
wow,
is really unheard of. And we're also able to retain the follow-up for long periods of time. The oldest cohort on the Isle of Wight are now 28 years old, and we're just following up their babies. And between the 1,300 recruited at the time, we now have 500 babies. So we can look at transgenerational differences in allergy prevalence, in epigenetics, in nutritional intake. And so basically, I did my PhD there looking at nutritional factors in pregnancy and early life, the development of food allergy and other allergic diseases. And I'm probably most known for my papers on the prevalence of food allergy, which has been included in guidelines all over the world.
So, Karina, you know, one of the things that I hear sometimes when I'm out doing public speaking to groups is people say, well, how come there are so many more people with food allergies now. When I was a child, I don't remember anybody with a food allergy. Do you hear that kind of comment as well? And how do you respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, I often hear that. And the other statement that people make is that also those with food allergies tend to have more severe food allergies than, many years ago. In particular, in my clinical practice, I see a lot more children with food protein-induced enterocolitis syndrome, or FPIES, as we refer to it, and eosinophilic esophagitis, which is EOE. And I think, we don't really know what is driving these, the immune system to develop more allergies. We do think, and I mean, I think, and I'm just submitting a grant looking at it in a bit more detail, that it is heavily influenced by the maternal diet. But then, of course, diet influences the microbiome, which then again, may affect epigenetics and then could affect, immune responses as well. Other than diet, I think it's exposure or lack of exposure to animals. There's different pollens in the air. We have more air pollution. And I think, we see more obesity, and that's one aspect of my research that I'm looking in as well, is really that relationship between obesity and development of allergic diseases, because in many ways, I think one is driving the other. So I think there's many factors that could lead to this increase in allergic diseases that we see.
I've shared with you, and you've been in contact with my sister-in-law, who's a board-certified allergist also in Colorado, and she and I have talked about this, and I've talked about it with Dr. Dave Stukas, and we've had him on the show. And, I think a lot of the general public wants to know one reason, and what I hear from you and from Dr. Dave Stukas and from my sister-in-law is we just don't really know. There could be a variety of different things that can be causing this increase in allergies and food allergies. We're talking with Karina Venter. She's a not only a dietitian, but she has her PhD. And Karina, what's your PhD in?
That's sort of been a point of debate.
Okay.
Speaking, my PhD is in allergy and immunology, but with a focus really on food allergies.
Okay. And we'll be talking about how you can connect with her on social media. We're talking about food allergies, food sensitivity. What's the difference? How do you get tested? What tests should you look for or talk to your physician about? Stay tuned to the Ingalls Information Aisle. Welcome back to the Ingalls Information Aisle. This is Leah, your Ingalls dietitian. I'm talking to dietitian Karina Venter. She is not only a dietitian, but she has her PhD, and she specializes in food allergy. And we're talking a little bit about the prevalence of food allergy and is it really increasing, and what could we attribute that to? And, Karina, one of the things that Dr. Dave Stukas and my sister-in-law, who's an allergist, had said is that, a lot of times people self-diagnose and they say that they have a food allergy, but they don't actually have a diagnosed food allergy. They have they don't like a food, or maybe they had some sort of reaction to it, more of a gastrointestinal reaction than a true food allergy reaction. Can you explain to people listening what's the difference between a food allergy and maybe a food sensitivity?
Yeah, I will do my best to do that because it is actually a complex area. So we have this big umbrella term, which we call food hypersensitivity or adverse reactions to food. And then within this, we have two broad categories. The one is the food allergies and the one is food intolerances. Now, if we first look at food intolerance, which some people refer to as food sensitivities, this is not driven by the immune system, so We have lactose intolerance, which is the most common one. But then many people seem to think that they may be intolerant to certain foods, causing them gastrointestinal problems. They may be intolerant to food colorings, which they claim give them hives. Many people have intolerances, actually true intolerances to sulfite, exacerbating their asthma and causing them wheeze. But there's no test for this because, you know, there's no particular immune cell that we know is causing this. In terms of lactose, you could perhaps test lactase deficiency, but in terms of sulfite, let's say intolerance, which is well known, you know, I've done challenges to many adults in my allergy clinic when I was on the Isle of Wight to sulfite. The only way to diagnose it is literally to give the chemical and then watch them over 2 to 3 hours. There's no test that's going to tell you you're sulfite sensitive. Mm. So when people think they have sensitivities to foods leading to gastrointestinal symptoms, once again, there's no test. I think another common example, which I've done a lot in the United Kingdom, but I'm a bit rusty because I'm not seeing any FODMAP-related patients at the point, is the FODMAP diets where people have issues with digesting certain carbohydrates. There's no test, really. We have to take the food out, get them better, then reintroduce to confirm. So that's sort of like sensitivities, and I think that's where why there are so many kids claiming able to diagnose these sensitivities, because from an allergy perspective, we cannot offer our patients any test. We know that there's no validated test. We know that doing those tests is a waste of money and a waste of time, and that the only way that you can really diagnose sensitivities is take the food out, get better, reintroduce, and see if the symptoms come back. That's really the bottom line of sensitivities. Then when we talk about food allergies, which clearly involves the immune system, we even see a spectrum there because we have the IgE one, so where the mast cells and IgE production, which is one of the immunoglobulins, are involved. And everybody knows somebody that's eaten peanuts and within 5 to 10 minutes or at least within 2 hours of eating it had swelling of the lips and hives. So that's a more simple form of allergy we can test. The skin test will form a wheal, or we can detect IgE in the blood, and coupled with a good history, we can make a diagnosis. But also within the food allergies, we have the non-IgE one, so there's no IgE involvement. Skin prick test won't diagnose, blood test won't diagnose, and once again, we have no diagnostic test. So with eosinophilic esophagitis and SBI, we take a good history. We then eliminate the foods which, you know, according to the history, indicates that it may be the culprit foods or foods that we've indicated through years of doing research in these fields. Take it out, get the child better or the adult better, and then we reintroduce to confirm that the food is causing it. So really within this whole spectrum of food allergies and then the spectrum of food sensitivities, the only a phenomenon of food allergy is that we can test for are the IgE-mediated ones. And then once again, it's important to know that many people will have high levels to peanut or high specific IgE levels, particularly to wheat. I've published papers on the wheat issue that tolerate it perfectly well, and that there's other things driving these IgE levels to peanut. Peanut, for example, one of the peanut proteins cross-react with grass. So many people that grass sensitized will have high levels of peanut IgE, but they're fine with peanut. Oh. And then the same with wheat. You know, many people are wheat grass sensitized, which is driving IgE production to wheat, but they're not wheat allergic and they can eat it. So even ordering those kind of tests over the internet and then deciding that you have an allergy is not going to be valid. You absolutely need to see an allergist to interpret those tests and really decide whether we're dealing with a true allergy or not.
So I'm really glad that you've sort of said a lot of things that you said, especially about some of these tests, because, you know, I'm seeing more and more of these come through, like, here's a Groupon, you can get this food sensitivity, and they even call it a food allergy test online, and, you know, just... I don't even know. Some of them are using feces and, you know, cheek swabs. I don't know what they're doing hair samples, I mean, and send it in and we'll tell you all these foods that you can't eat. And then I get these emails from people and they say, I'm not supposed to be eating. And they list like 30 different foods. I mean, and some of the foods don't even make sense. I mean, from an allergy perspective, I mean, so I'm glad that you said these food sensitivity tests are not medically valid, not evidence-based. And I think we just need to really emphasize that with people that they're wasting their time, they're wasting their money, and they may be excluding foods that are really important. We're going to be talking more with Karina Venter. She is a registered dietitian and has her PhD specializing in the area of food allergy. And we'll be talking about how some sites that maybe she would refer you to if you are interested in learning more about food allergies, food intolerances, sensitivities, what are more evidence-based sites for information, how you can follow her on social media. Stay tuned to the Ingles Information Aisle. Welcome back to the Ingles Information Aisle. This is Leah, your Ingles dietitian. We're talking about food allergies and food sensitivities with Karina Venter. She's a registered dietitian. She has her PhD specializing in the area of food allergies. Karina, how can people find you on social media if they're on Twitter? I know that you do post things on Twitter from time to time.
Yes, but it's probably most helpful from my tweets is that I have the opportunity to attend a large number of conferences every year. And even though I'm speaking and busy with meetings, I always make a point of tweeting from at least 3 or 4 sessions. So I think, you know, if you want to know what's happening in the allergy world, then, you know, it may be helpful for you to follow me, especially during the times when I'm at conferences. My Twitter handle is sort of like the wrong way around. It's first my last name, so Venter, and then Karina. And it's just because there's already a Karina Venter on Twitter, which is not me. So, which is why I have it the other way around. I also have a blog. If you just search Karina Venter online, easier if you just search it as one word, where I have useful information on multiple exclusion diets and also early introduction of peanuts. So that's how you can find me.
I also like to refer people to Dr. Dave Stukas. He's a great person to follow on Twitter. He's Allergy Kids Doc on Twitter. Is there anybody else on Twitter that you would, if people are on Twitter that, in terms of allergy, that you like to refer people to?
So, yes, definitely Allergy Kids Doc is the number one. I also follow George Dutoy. He tweets on the Go Allergy. He's okay. The first author of the LEAP study. People seem to tweet on and off in the allergy world. Majority of people really tweet when they are at conferences.
Right.
But Dr. Douglas Mack, he tweets on the DR Doc, Doc Mack MD. He often tweets quite a lot when he's at conferences. Brian Vickery, he tweets on there at ATLERGIST, so ATL allergist. He is very involved with oral immunotherapy trials. He always tweets about the latest papers coming out. And then, of course, I follow Dr. David Fisher. He tweets on there IgE. CPD. He is amazing. When he's at a conference, he tweets all the time, fascinating tweets, which I follow. And then also the European Academy of Asthma and Clinical Immunology, they tweet all the latest papers, they tweet from conferences. And then Sherry Coleman-Collins, she tweets under Dietitian Sherry. Like me, she gets to go to many conferences. We're often sitting tweeting next to each other. You know, very useful information and food allergy-related information coming from Sherry. I always look up her tweets at the end of the day at a conference to make sure I haven't missed anything.
So, and what about just general websites and resources for people? Maybe if someone, let's first start out with maybe someone who has a child with food allergies or multiple food allergies. Are there some websites or resources that you would refer them to that they can Google?
Yes. I always thank my patients, especially if they have multiple food allergies, to keep with food allergies. And the website is also just the one name, Kids with Food Allergies, one word. They have very useful information on recipes. You know, sometimes when you are a mom with a newly diagnosed kid with a milk and egg allergy and the third birthday is coming up and you think this is going to be the first child ever without a birthday cake, then that's a really good website to go on for recipes excluding multiple things. Buying snacks, I think when you have the initial diagnosis, can be really hard. So there is a website, Snack Safely, with up-to-date information on suitable snacks and which of the snacks contain which allergens. I always take the mothers through that as well. And then APFED, APFED, that's a website really targeted for children with eosinophilic diseases. But once again, really good for children that can only eat a few foods or children that have to avoid many different foods. So I send families there, even if the kids don't particularly have EOE, but they're avoiding a number of foods for even IgE-mediated reasons, then I think there's useful information too. And then FAIR, of course, is the foodallergy.org. It's the sort of like official allergy information from the United States. Many of the information handouts have been written by Dr. Scott Sicherer, so definitely a credible source to go to. And then also FACT, which is foodallergyawareness.org. So really useful information for parents. I'd say for healthcare professionals, you may want to search for the American College of Asthma, Allergy and Immunology or the American Academy of Asthma, Allergy and Immunology. Useful information. And then perhaps, Leah, if that's okay, I'll tell them a little bit more about the INDANA initiative for allergy dietitians.
Sure.
So about 5 years ago, I started the International Network of Diet and Nutrition in Allergy. As short, we go as INDANA. We have a website. It's really for anybody with an interest in allergy and nutrition, irrespective of whether you're a dietitian, an MD, or a supermarket dietitian. The membership is free, and we do have information on the website. You know, we try and upload all the latest papers written by allergy specialist dietitians, any presentations given that could be of relevance. We have a blog once a month. But I would say, although the information I hope is helpful, it's more the networking that's really important. And so you can search the INDANA website as well and just complete a form to obtain free membership.
Well, we're coming to the end of our segment here. I really appreciate, Karina, you taking the time to talk to me a little bit more and to the audience a little bit more about food allergies and what's the difference between an allergy and a sensitivity, and give us some really great resources. This is kind of it can be overwhelming for moms and dads when the child is newly diagnosed. But I think one of the important things that Karina has said that I'll emphasize again is please see a board certified allergist, and please don't get these kits online and start excluding food from your child's diet. Karina, thanks so much for joining us on the Ingalls Information Aisle.
Thank you for having me. Have a good day.